This is Hackerspace Digest for Saturday, January 22nd, 2010. My name is Matt, also known as Brimstone Online. Hackerspace Digest is a weekly podcast recorded by members of Makers Local 256 in Huntsville, Alabama. Check out makerslocal.org for more information about us. All right, let's introduce everyone else going around the table. We have Heather.
Hi, also known as Cherry.
Tim, Crash Cart Online.
I'm Alice, generally known as Allie.
Dimitri, also known as GT Pyro.
I'm Nathan, known as Jim Shoe Online.
I'm just Tuttle.
So for Makers Local 256 update, I went to Germany.
That was fun. You were all the way in Germany?
In Germany, yes.
Why were you in Germany?
It was cold, mainly to see family and friends in the holidays, Christmas and New Year's that came up. There's a ton of snow. Can I mention that again?
You brought some back with you, even.
I did, actually.
To the southeast.
From the Deutschland.
Why go to Germany in December?
For the holidays.
But snow.
Old Tannenbaum.
They handle the snow a lot better than we do, though. Unless there's a lot of snow here. And we handled it actually really okay. But anyway, other than seeing family in the northern Germany area, I also attended 27C3, which is the 27th Chaos Computer Congress put on by CBase in Berlin. It takes place in the Berlin Conference Center, which is this quaint little three-story building that had a good-sized basement floor that had a lot of workshop-type things and just general open hack space for things. They had two general track conference rooms on the second floor, as well as all the ticketing and a lot of the market-type stuff, where you could buy t-shirts. You could also get set up with the GSM network and the DECT network that they had running. And then on the second floor, they had the main conference area, which is where the keynotes happened, and some of the bigger talks that they expected. There was a little bit of workshop area around the main conference room on the second floor as well. There was about 4,500 people that showed up at this HackerCon.
Wow.
There's a lot of people.
So
most all of them fit in the building.
Compared to Hope and Freaknik, which have been the ones that we normally go to, is this, like, huge or...?
This is a lot bigger than Freaknik.
It has most of 300 at max, and he said 4,000. DEF CON has 6+, doesn't it?
I don't know the DEF CON numbers yet. We're going this year, but
right.
We can talk about later.
Oh, did you hear? Continue. Right. Sorry.
To continue to talk about 27C3, it was as big as Hope was, I would think, about the same size.
Okay.
There was some different aspects. On the first floor, they had a full-blown food service area and tables to sit in. You could get hot food or cold food or snack food or Klamata, which was the big drink, energy tea drink there. Nathan, I hear, loves it. It's good.
I tried a bottle. I didn't care for it, actually. But
agreed.
With cons of this size, they usually go through a pre-sales type system. There was four different opportunities to buy tickets, all of which sold out in less than a minute. They would open up, you would then reserve a ticket, and then you'd have like 24 hours to pay for it. So all of the tickets would get reserved within a minute or less. ShmooCon, that happens actually next weekend in D.C., had three pre-sale opportunities. It took them 6 seconds the first one, 5 seconds the second one, and 7 seconds the third one to sell out.
Wow.
To get them all reserved.
Any idea how many tickets per session? Or
I don't know. I mean, you can figure out what it was.
Yeah. It's a couple hundred. They have 1,000 max,
okay.
I think.
Yeah, they're not quite as big, but they're getting bigger.
Yeah.
Another interesting one to go to.
Steady. They're leveling out at about 1,000.
What was interesting that what ShmooCon did, actually, let me bump that one. 27C3 also had a concept called Peace Missions, where you could sign up to get dedicated bandwidth to the streams. if you wanted to have your own little 27C3 party at your own hackerspace or other or business or school or whatever and watch the talks. The only trick watching them from the States is that they're 7 hours ahead. So you'd have to get up at like 4 a.m. or something to watch. But hey, you were done by lunch. And
I wanted to do that, but I didn't get around.
I did catch a couple sitting at just having the stream going while I was doing some work. But it's nice.
Yeah.
That everything was streamed.
What's also interesting about the peace missions is that they had people on watching Twitter streams and IRC channels for each of the conference rooms that were going on. So if somebody had a question that was listening to the streams, they could get that question back to the speaker
in a
very quick manner.
Yeah, that was something that was Dick Farr kind of, they just kind of set that up like the day before the con. Somebody had this idea and they're like, okay, let's do it and see who wants to help. And
yeah, Nick Farr will tell you that the conference organizes itself and somebody wanted to do this and they gathered up some people to be the peace angels or something. They had an angels concept, which he describes much better than I do. But they gathered the people and they made it happen. And this was an idea they thought of like the day before.
Sometimes it's not about what you make happen, but what you allow happen.
Right. Yeah. It's all about what the end result is. Another interesting thing just generally is that for the website for the conference, they had just a wiki open. It wasn't like a strict professional site. It wasn't a blog type layout. It was just a MediaWiki instance that somebody got them a custom theme and you could go at it. A couple of the pages were more locked down, so only proper users could edit them. But there was a whole section for all of the file transfer swap stuff of your completely legitimate items and several other things.
That's kind of a neat idea.
But yeah, there's some discovery. There's also like a missed connections one and a dating, which was kind of weird. All of that is still up, so feel free to go find it.
So I might have missed somebody?
You might have missed somebody.
So what's the age demographic on this conference?
Anywhere from 6 to 83, I think they said.
Wow. Okay.
Are you trying to find a lady friend? Or?
Just curious.
From
Something
Germany.
Something for everyone. Okay.
From Germany, that's right.
Yep.
Talk about long-distance relationships.
Berlin slides. That's now part of 27C3, not...
Can I talk about 27C3 first?
Okay.
I've got a whole list of...
Sorry,
I want to go through.
Go
no, that's fine. I'll cover all that, though. The keynote that went on, the guy had given the keynote a couple years back, and it was interesting. I can't recap all of it here. Two of the big notes was that privacy is a huge thing over in the European area, whereas here in the States, we will trust private companies with all of our data, and we don't trust the government with our data. But over in Europe, it's the other way around. They believe that the government should have the information and private companies shouldn't. So it's a completely different take on WikiLeaks being the huge one. And like the Facebook privacy ones, there was a data retention policy act that tried to go through in the Europe area and everything. One of the other points that he brought up was that new people getting involved in the environment that is the Congress and other such events shouldn't have to fight the pre-sale system to get access to come to these events. He didn't have any good solutions or concepts to this. When I came back and I learned more about ShmooCon, apparently anybody who submitted a talk to ShmooCon and didn't get accepted got an opportunity to purchase a ticket. They didn't have to fight the pre-sale system. They could just say, okay, I would like a ticket instead, and they would still be able to get in.
So couldn't you, go around that system, come up with a stupid talk? Ha ha ha!
Maybe. I don't know if they offered everybody a ticket. I don't, or if it was only people who honestly put forth a good effort to submit a good talk. But with such a fast pre-sale system, that's an interesting way to deal with that. A quick recap of interesting talks. There was one called Contemporary Profiling of Web Users, which was a way without... Well, they had using JavaScript and then not using JavaScript, and to figure out what browser you are, who you are, stuff like that. More for verifying that you're actually a human and what class of human or what group of human you fit into.
I am a meat popsicle.
More so than you're not a bot. One of their things is that they didn't like CAPTCHAs, so they showed how to make sure the web browser was not trying to spoof user agents, and looking at the actual order of the headers differs between each browser's so much that you can say that is an Opera browser that's connecting to me, not a Firefox or an IE6 browser.
So how many people were using IE6? 5, 6, 7?
I don't know. At the conference, if you go back and watch, all of these talks are online and recorded in nice, high quality. You can go through and watch these to learn more. I'm just trying to touch on them. They had charts and graphs and everything with this one.
So there's a new caste system where it depends on how well you use your computer as opposed to who your parents are?
There's always been those kinds of delegations in any demographic.
Clearly, if you use a Mac, you're not a human.
Ooh.
You want to come say that over here? Because I will call upon the power of Steve Jobs, and he's already in pain, and I don't need to do that.
Hey, at least you don't use Windows.
Another interesting talk was about Node.js and using that as a web server as it was originally intended, and using it in other ways, like with the PCAP library and having it respond to just general packets that happen across the network. So that was an interesting talk as well. One of the big talks there was Console Hacking 2010, and it was the big PS3 key jailbreak, which, if you're interested in this podcast and interested in PlayStations, you've probably already heard about this. So their talk is available. Watch it. It's interesting. They're getting sued over it now or something. So, yeah.
That makes it really good.
Yeah. You pissed off the wrong people then.
Oh, goodness. I think we have
another talk was Android geolocation using the GSM network. Mainly, the guy showed that when you dig through the log files on an Android phone, you find such interesting tidbits as what tower it connected to and when. Google already provides an API that they don't document on how to figure out where these towers are physically located. So if you can get the log files off of an Android phone via ADB, via a crashed application that has log read privileges or other things, you can then figure out where this person was at certain times as far back as the log file goes. He also touched on some topics on how to minimize this. I'd love to give a better demonstration of that to our local 2600 group, something at some time soon. Another interesting talk was having fun with RDP, and which is, I remember what RTP stands for. It's used in SIP calls to transfer the actual media and not the signaling, which is what SIP does. But he showed how to hijack the call that's coming out of, his example was an asterisk box, which really hits home with a lot of us here.
Indeed.
How to inject DTMF into a running call to transfer it off to your own 1-900 number and start gathering money from the company. Yeah, that was some scary stuff. He didn't publish any code, fortunately, yet, but he said it's all pretty easy and pretty straightforward. It's just waiting for somebody to abuse it. These were all more official 1 hour, hour and a half length talks. Another concept that went on was called lightning talks, which you had a very strict 5 minutes to get up, say what you wanted to, and get off the stage. It's usually used more for introducing a topic and getting people interested about it without going too in-depth. If you wanted to, you could ask the audience for another minute, and they'd give you another minute to wrap up. Three lightning talks stood out. One of them was the OpenLays demonstration, where a guy has this open source hardware and software laser that he controls using a JACD library. And it's a really interesting visual, at least to watch for a talk.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah, he made Hackaday with it shortly after, and a couple other sites. Talks Online, I recommend watching that one. Another one was Dean Kaminsky's Augmented Reality for Colorblindness. He showed off using... He realized that people see colors differently, and there's a lot more than just red, green, and the other major colorblind color. There's several different shades of green, or... I'm doing a horrible job presenting this. But one of them, he said that brown is also a very strange color, and it doesn't behave like any of the other colors do. He actually gave that full talk at BerlinSides. The closing talk was more your standard wrap-up on stuff that happened during the con, mainly the knock operations, which is what us nerds really like to listen to. Over the 4 days, they averaged about 10 terabytes a day transferring out their gigabit or their 10 gig connection. They said that they didn't utilize the 10 gig connection as much as they did last year, which was a little mind-blowing. They did, most of their traffic was IPv4. Some of it was IPv6, though, a notable percentage. I don't remember that percentage, though. Like I said, the talk's online. Go look at that for actual details. One of the big things in Europe and that area is that they don't have as many IPv6 addresses assigned to them, or IPv4 addresses assigned to them, so they like the IPv6 stack because they can get access to more things going on. What also happened at the same time as 27C3 was BerlinSides, which happened actually at Seabase. This was a completely free con, kind of a sub-con or a con going alongside a con. It's a completely different atmosphere. It was one room. They went on for about the same duration. They only did 3 days, though. The room could only hold about 60 to 70 people as opposed to 4,500.
So this was just much, 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 much smaller.
Much more smaller, much more intimate, a lot darker, too. I don't think any of these talks were recorded, though. They had a lot of signs posted saying don't record audio or video or take pictures.
Really?
So is this...
Which was interesting.
Do you mean darker as in just physically less light, or do you mean darker
physically
as light,
there was less
like the kind
lights.
Of theme?
No, okay. they turned off all of the lights in order to see during the talk, to see the presentation.
Photography and recording, you think that was Seabase's rules or conference rules?
They were temporary, like just a sheet of paper stuck to the wall in a lot of places. So I think this is more just for the conference and not so much for Seabase. Maybe it was, but the signs also said BerlinSides on them.
Sure.
So I think they're more for the conference.
Gotcha.
I attended some of those talks. The one that really stood out, though, was Extroverted Spaces, given by Willow Blue out of Jigsaw Renaissance in Seattle, actually, by an American.
Yeah.
And she talked about how Jigsaw Renaissance and Sector 76 and BitWorks or BucketWorks, and there's four spaces involved in a group called the Space Federation. Bunch of Star Trek nerds, she said.
Sure.
But what they're trying to do is focus more on getting hackerspaces up and going and running quickly. They want to help out with the documentation in filing for taxes, in filing for insurance, in all that mundane paperwork that some of us love, but most of us don't. And just getting you up and going and running for your hackerspace. They also focus on a lot of the education stuff that goes on. So they're an interesting one to check out if you want to learn more about that section of running a hackerspace.
Yeah, it sounded like they were trying to make it basically so the engineering people can focus on doing the engineering things at the hackerspace, and you can
exactly.
kind of push off all your paperwork and everything to them, and they will help you with it as much as they can and file as much of it as they can. Since they already kind of know what you're looking to do and, you know, what insurance you need and things like that. Man, that would have been a really big help 3 years ago.
Wouldn't it? I mean, we figured out most of it. We figured it out for Alabama here. But,
right, yeah.
I mean, it varies so much between each state. And then there is a huge difference between how setting up a hackerspace works in America versus France or Germany or the Netherlands. I mean, pick another country. Oh, yeah. There's a huge gap there. To round it all off, I was on a Signal podcast episode for, I guess it was just the 27C3 special. There's a lot of big names on that as well. They're all in the show notes there, so I'm not going to say any of them so I don't forget anybody. we recapped some of 27C3 and the stuff that went on. I missed mentioning one of the other lightning talks that happened at 27C3 was actually given from Crashbase in Los Angeles. So this was a fully distributed conference as well.
Wow.
Which was
that's kind of cool.
Which was really interesting. So we're there in the Berlin Conference Center watching some group in Los Angeles being streamed in instead of being streamed out. So that was a really interesting concept as well.
So I take it, I see that Emmanuel Goldstein was on the show, and I see also that there was a rant about WikiLeaks. Were you involved in that?
Yes. They talked, that was the big thing that's happened
last
year, really, is that whole WikiLeaks debacle, or debacle. And they covered, they touched constantly on the privacy and getting the leaks out and what happened and where a corporation should stand, where a government should stand, stuff like that.
I was just wondering if you had a, did you get a word in? And
I didn't really get a word in. I don't really care much about the WikiLeaks stuff. I mean, it's like it goes on, but sitting there with these other people discussing it, made me realize that I don't really care about the WikiLeaks stuff, but I do care about the technology that's going on behind the scenes. And that, the guy that leaked all these cables wasn't really that inclined. I mean, he snuck them all out on a Lady Gaga CD. So, I mean, it's not like it was really crazy complicated to do.
I'm sorry, wasn't it an American soldier that snuck him out? And he was, low level?
Yeah,
and really shouldn't
have
had
access
to him,
is that my understanding? There was, more than 1,000 people that had access to these documents.
Allegedly. Right. Let's throw that out there.
Okay, I'm sorry. Allegedly.
Allegedly. I mean, he just burned them all to a CD, wrote Lady Gaga and her latest album title on it, and walked it out of the building.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there wasn't anything crazy complicated with thumb drives or private servers or encrypted links or anything.
I mean, it's that Hollywood view of spying and espionage, and it's this is much easier than you think.
Yeah, and then now that WikiLeaks has become such a target, there's other sites that are popping up too. So I feel like that even if we don't care about what's actually being leaked, is that since we do understand the encryption and the anonymity protocols and actually properly setting up such a distributing website, we should help with that section. Even if you don't care that, more government secrets leak, big whoop, help out with the technology that's going on, because we want to make sure that's right and proper and secure.
Right.
There was quite a discussion about education in hackerspaces as well, and the different things that go on there. One of the things I learned about the podcast and podcasting, since we're doing the one here, is that they do all theirs live. There's no cutting or post-processing. They use music that takes place as just kind of a quick break to stop, get another beer, stand up, sit back down. It was like a 2-hour recording. We had a 5-minute break with music, which was great to just stand up and sit back down.
So with the music that they use, do they have to worry about things like copyright and getting the proper licenses and
all of
that?
Yep. There's several great websites to find completely Creative Commons or open license.
This was an issue in podcasting 5 years ago when podcasting first started, and now there's, so much podcast-safe music out there.
With people who support freedom.
Right.
Yeah, you can find a lot of, royalty-free music. In fact, just type in royalty-free music and several sites pop up.
Like the Merry-Go-Round Broke Down and other various songs.
No, I mean ones that sound, honestly good.
I'm kidding.
Not 1920s recording.
Come on.
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
You stop it, sir. This is all the ones I use.
The
Camp Town Ladies.
The one I'd like to see us do is make more music, but we don't make enough music, so we're gonna try.
Do we have enough people to make music?
It only takes one.
I do like just on a quick side note, mm-hmm. GMC on the Signal podcast, which is I guess it's signal.hackerspaces.org probably.
That's it.
He does a few different things, but GMC also does. I think GMC was doing the last one. Somebody else does it. It's a 8-bit music podcast, and it's just really cool.
8-bit or less.
Right, 8-bit or less, listening to this 8-bit or less music. There's other hacker spaces that do podcasts and things, and they all somehow end up on the Signal podcast. So it's pretty cool.
Another interesting attribute from the way that Social Hack and GMC run their podcast is that they do it in a more moderated fashion, where they have a moderator and then they have a guy working the technique, as they call it. And then they've got signs that you don't hear on the podcast on controlling a little bit of the flow between the two people and the whole podcast. Also, people will have to raise their hands and the moderator then points to them to let them know that they're okay to speak. So that helps because we can then just mute all of the mics that aren't in use. We were in a room that had a magnificent echo, so that helped cut down on some of the background noise.
Why do I feel like this is somehow aimed at me?
No.
So, guilty Matt, conscience, maybe? All of these interesting talks, are you going to put a link up to these?
Yep. By the time you are hearing this, there'll be plenty of links on the page for this podcast.
Awesome. I think people will be very interested in all of this stuff.
Up next is the Global Hackerspace Cupcake Challenge. And Nathan and Alice participated in that. I'll let one of them speak more.
Okay. I guess it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, somebody decided that hackerspaces should get together and send cupcakes to each other.
Oh, you mean it wasn't the night before the competition?
That was part of the competition, Alice.
So it was at least posted.
The idea is that every third weekend of the month, there is a hackathon. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. There's a hackathon. And so the idea was, during this hackathon, let's bake some cupcakes. Let's make a creative way to send these cupcakes and then send them to another hackerspace over 1,000 miles away. So Friday rolled around, and it was hackerspace week. It was hackathon weekend, and I had no way of baking a cupcake. So I asked Alice how much she would charge me to bake a cupcake, and at that point, she took over the project.
I'm sorry.
She helped with the project.
No, she did 90% of the work, and I am glad that she did. Yeah. It was awesome.
Very capable work.
And Nathan takes 90% of the credit.
No. Managing supervisor.
I did not want you to be baking the cake.
It's a compliment.
I baked a cake for Christmas, and you loved it.
That's
Anyways.
True. It was a very good cake.
That's
right.
A lie.
Yes,
so,
I'm not sure. I'm interjecting. Flies.
But
so, Nathan, what about the frosting?
I'm talking
about
the...
The cake
told
was made that you could put your own frosting on it. And
all
so that's
all
what
cakes
we
are
did.
Made like that?
No, you as the end user could put your own frosting on it.
Did you really just use end user and cake?
Anyway,
was that in the EULA that you're allowed to manage the frosting yourself?
All right, back to the competition.
Okay, so Friday rolled around. I asked Alice if she could make a cupcake for me. She kind of took over. What did you do? You spent till 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning baking?
It was about 4 o'clock, but that's not because of the time I put in. It's because of my own inefficiency. I could have really cut the time down, but I was kind of having fun. See,
that's what it's all about.
The piece of information, you're all thinking one cupcake. Why are you up till 4 in the morning? I spent 3+ hours baking.
Girl, I understand.
So
understand. You understand. Well, You're right.
Okay, so what happened was, after we decided that we were going to do the cupcake, we had to figure out how we were going to decorate it, how we were going to ship it, all of that. And so over dinner, somebody mentioned putting a cupcake inside of a cupcake. Well, that's great. Two cupcakes. We decided to put another one inside of the cupcake. So our cupcake has two cupcakes inside of it.
And why was there three cupcakes?
Yo, dog.
Because we wanted to.
I heard it was the Inception cupcake. And there were ideas to put the noise effect in there. And when they opened the box, it would go, bang.
We didn't actually get that far, no. Right. But that was one of the talks.
Right, because by the time Saturday rolled around when we needed to get this thing done, it was 6 o'clock and we were still, Alice was still trying to make it.
Well, there was one person making the actual cake, and the packaging part seemed for some reason, even conceptually, to have to wait until after the cake was made.
Right, because we didn't know how big the cake was going to be or anything like that.
So, if anyone's interested, by the way, the very inside cupcake is red. It has purple frosting on it. The next cupcake is chocolate. It has orange frosting on it. Oh, no. The next cake is blue with orange frosting, and the outside cake is chocolate with white and green frosting. I know it's absolutely terrible. I intentionally chose horrible colors because I want them to show up when they cut into the cake.
Yes. Contrast.
So, yes. Contrast was the plan.
So, so we made our cupcake. I sent it out Tuesday because Monday was Martin Luther King Day. We couldn't, post offices weren't open. Kind of like, there's a couple links here on the wiki. The pre-blog post, the post-blog post, and a bunch of pictures that were taken. Right now, as of today, the post blog isn't actually up yet because I didn't want to spoil the Santa Barbara hackerspace like surprise when they get our cupcake. But we got theirs yesterday,
right?
Which was awesome.
And so the idea is that we sent our cupcake to them; they sent their cupcake to us. And then we have to record it and open it and then judge that cupcake based on some criteria. So what did you guys think?
Their cupcake?
Yes.
The packaging was over the top amazing. I'm very impressed.
Right. So they took a foot square box and they put like a frame inside it.
Balsa wood frame.
Right. And what was the...
They had a PVC container.
PVC
inside
container,
this.
Like spring loaded.
Suspended with springs.
Yes, suspended and then paper all around it.
Padded with paper.
And the cupcake was inside this PVC pipe.
I'm going to be honest with y'all. Saying things like this doesn't help. Do we have pictures that we're going to put
right,
up?
There will be more pictures.
Definitely. Link to pictures in the show notes already,
it's
even.
Sweet. It was so amazing we can't not geek out about it. Good. And inside the PVC, they had wrapped the cupcake in wire, and it was suspended, kind of spring-like.
Right,
kind of
like
inside.
I've seen hanging candles that use the same idea, this spring that coils up as part of what's holding it. Yeah,
yes.
That was very fun.
Yes, it was really cool. Our packaging wasn't quite as exciting. We packaged it.
What are you talking about?
Well, see, that's like a, we don't know how great it's going to be.
Our packaging was awesome. Okay, so what I did.
How did I know that was coming?
So no one helped
after
with anything
Alice
here.
Made the cake, and we put frosting in the bottom of the container that she cooked the cake in. We put the cake down, right? You put the cake down. Alice did most of this. I just put it in a box. That's what I was getting to, my part of the story. So we take the cake. And I put I made like a cardboard box around it, taped that together, and we put skewers through it to hold it down. So if the box got tipped upside down, hopefully with the frosting gluing the cake to the bottom and the skewers through it, the cake wouldn't fall out.
And this looked fabulous, is what you're saying.
When you opened it, there was like a giant-ass cupcake right there.
I'm just saying.
And then we put bread
here
around the sides and stuff because the bread sucks the moisture out. Isn't that how that works, Alice?
Yes, the bread will keep the cake from getting stale.
Okay. I put like a little note in there saying Alice did most of the work, and I just packaged it.
So, have y'all heard back yet?
They haven't got it. They were supposed to get it Thursday, and I don't know what the deal is, but they still have yet to get it. So
that freaks me out. Oh my god, if they lost that. Oh, maybe some of the mailmen are enjoying your delicious cake.
Who's going to eat a random cake that comes in the mail if you aren't expecting
I just want you to look at me in my face for a second that says I would.
I mean, there's like three people in the background that raised their hands.
Did none of you see Harry Potter?
No.
Girl, that wasn't real. That was not an autobiography.
Basically, I had a blast doing it. I think, Alice, you had a blast doing it.
I really did.
Tim, you helped.
I helped conceptually. I just love that these kinds of projects are going on.
Right.
And I support that.
I helped eating beta cake.
That's true. I helped yes, that too. Right. It was
we
good
did have
beta
a beta cake.
I have to say, I'm particularly proud of the custom cake pans we made.
That's true. They were custom to make a cupcake of that size.
She wouldn't let me buy the $30 giant cupcake pan. So we kind of just walked around trying to figure out how we could make a cupcake pan for such a ginormous cupcake. And so what are those, the things that we got?
They're disposable aluminum roasting pans. We got the circular, I believe they're 9-inch roasting pans, and just reshaped them.
It was like $2. Reshaped them. And
wasn't cost part of the contest, too? Or am I
it was.
On that? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it. And here's the crazy part. I went to the post office to ship this thing. And I know the post office I go to, I know the lady there. And so I was telling her, you know, everything about the cupcake and all that.
You told her what was in the package?
Right.
Okay.
Ooh, maybe that was a problem. Now maybe. I see she might have eaten it.
Anyways. Oh, my God. She's a boss.
No.
Just rips open my package and eats the cupcake.
Oh, yes, son, pay me a whole bunch of money to do this. I'm not going to put this in my pocket in 2 seconds.
That'd be funny, but I'm sure that's not. I'm sure that never happens with the U.S. Postal Service.
Upstanding citizens themselves.
So I hand her the box, and she like throws it down, you know, and I'm like, oh, there's a cupcake in there,
and she steps on it and then kicks it.
No, and then I told her, and she's like, oh, I'm sorry, I was throwing it around, and I was like, eh, it's okay, it's kind of part of the competition. And then she was like, it'll be 18 something, and I was like, for shipping,
ladies, did you hear that? He is cheap. He is cheap. He just admitted it, and it's on recording, and that's going into the podcast.
I spent $18 to ship a cupcake across
for
the country.
For a contest!
That's right.
That's dedication.
But it made me feel better because the Santa Barbara Hackerspace also spent about $18 shipping theirs. So, seems like...
The more important part is when we're getting cake.
No, the shipping. We already had... They opened it. We opened it last night.
Oh, I didn't know.
We got it in last night.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's go judge it really harshly.
It was delightful.
It was good.
We've already
wait, that's wait, what do you mean? That's not how you say it's good. You're
it
like,
was,
oh my god.
It was good.
No, you just
so anyways, yeah, check out the blog post and the pictures. I have some more pictures and a video to put up for our unboxing of their cake, and hopefully we can put up the pictures that they take for the unboxing of our cake.
Yeah.
Yay!
So, we want to get in the stories? The first one we have here is controlling real objects using Minecraft. And, okay, so now it's been about a week since I've looked at this. But the guy figured out how to use redstone inside of Minecraft, which... you can have switches and things, and then redstone going to like opening doors and all kinds of crazy stuff.
What's redstone?
What is Minecraft?
Minecraft is a video game.
Yes.
The purpose of the video game, there is no purpose.
It's to craft mines.
It's a sandbox.
It's a sandbox
life
game
with gnomes and worse graphics.
Right. Okay.
There's gnomes.
So, in the game, there is a stone called redstone, and you can use this to make circuits and electric.
Like triggered and like
right,
a primitive
like
wiring.
And he figured out how to read the output somehow from his computer, pipe that into like an Arduino, and change just LEDs. So he walks up in the video game, walks up and like flips a lever, and an LED goes on or off.
On his Arduino. In the real world.
Right. On his Arduino in the real world.
Flips a virtual switch.
Keyboard. I'm sorry. It's away from keyboard, not in the real world. But
IRL?
Correct.
No.
AFK.
No, AFK. Okay.
So, yes, he walks up, he flips the lever in Minecraft, in the video game, looks over to his right, and the light changes. So now he could start controlling his house. He could make a virtual house inside of Minecraft if he wanted, and then he could play the video game and like walk over to the living room and punch the button to turn off the living room lights if he so
chose. Could he do it backwards, and so he could go into the living room and like, oh crap, I left something on in the game, turn off the lights. I'm just saying.
You probably could apply it that way.
Anyways, I thought it was really cool. We have a Minecraft server that the shop doesn't run, but one of the members runs.
A lot of us participate in.
Right.
It's a good way to spend time.
It's a highly addictive game.
Yeah.
I would say good way to spend time.
Right.
I'm just saying.
I actually made an appearance.
Right. It's that good.
You went to the dark side?
I did. There's a tiny little mountain plateau in the Minecraft server.
With her name on it.
My name is written in torches.
For the ages.
That's pretty cool, Alice. I have to admit.
Until the game finally gets updated or torches burn out.
Oh, no.
I might have to go back and...
No, it could be eternal torches because they were grandfathered in.
What about lighting trees on fire? Torches. Could you like write your name in burning trees?
I'd have to go grow them first. Because I cut all
Well, you don't have to be there to grow them.
Stumps there.
So, okay. So anyways, the next thing that's on the story list, in Make Magazine, this girl created a glove that with a pressure sensor in it that when you high-five someone, it makes like an explosion sound.
One of the neat things I thought about this is she set it to a minimum pressure time. I don't know. It may have been 8 millionths of a second or something. So if she were to go lay her hand on the table, there would be no explosion sound. Or if she were to make a fist, there was only an explosion sound if it was a very quick pressure.
Right. Like slapping hands in a high five. Yes. Very well thought. What she used to put everything to make the sound and make everything?
I believe it was an Arduino.
Right. Right. An Arduino with a wave shield attached to it.
And what, pray tell, is a wave shield?
It's an additional shield that you can purchase for your Arduino that will play sounds.
Ooh.
Especially WAV files, I believe.
Raw and compressed PCM.
Yes.
She gets props because some of these ingredients came from not having been bought. They were just kind of laying around and she used them.
Oh, so absolutely. What you should be doing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
High five to that.
I like how you say ingredients and we say parts.
I like how you say parts and I say components.
Oh, we're going to get fancy up in here. That's what we're going to do.
Hey.
It's fine. No, it's fine.
So we're all in agreement that that's a pretty awesome project.
Yes.
High five.
That is high five explosion awesome. I just inserted that sound here. Sorry. Anyway.
I really feel like we need to make like a small short
you made an explosion sound?
With that.
Like you're
going to
edit an explosion sound in? So it's like...
You're going to make a soundboard here one day.
That's super cool.
Just one more time. You're going to edit an explosion.
And y'all were yelling at me about editing things out. I'm just saying.
So then, let's see. The next thing that's on here. Project to hijack the iPhone audio jack. I guess it's kind of like what Square does.
Well,
Square's the company that...
Square's a commercial product.
Right.
But this is using an interface that Square uses to talk with the iPhone.
Right, and it's open source.
Right, and so now, but what this project is doing is giving you access to the GPIO on your iPhone serial.
That's cool.
Riveting.
Like I'm going to continue.
I feel like you should because like I don't know what that is.
Edge of my seat.
I mean, okay, so some can we think of?
Well, like I understand what the Square app, what the Square app does, and that they give you this tiny little credit card reader that just translates the Magstripe codes into the microphone pin,
right,
to get back into the application that's running on your iPhone or your Android.
Right.
Now they can read credit cards with this app, and process micropayments with it.
Correct.
It's great for people with a little side cart or street vendors or more personal, very small business.
Hell, we have one just at our house. Just me and Mog.
Yeah, I mean, they're free to get the app.
It's
and
a large
sign
business
up.
There.
When you owe
house.
Us money, yeah. we're all like, oh, you don't have no cash. That's okay. We got our card reader right here.
So with this project, is it pins that are exposed on this external board that then get related
right,
into?
Right. It does actually. And it even almost it's the size of the square up reader.
Which is like an inch square,
yeah,
maybe.
But all it has exposed are
or an inch cube,
some input output pins that you can then.
And what kind of microcontroller does this use?
This uses an MSP430.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, and what is an MSP430?
Wow, Heather, really? Where have you been the last six shows?
It is Shaper's most favorite microcontroller.
Yes. So it has a microcroller to talk on the.
I don't know if you saw this. I brought in a couple. One day, I just happened to see that some other hackerspace had a coupon code for TI's website to get three of the little MSP430 USB development kits. It comes with like a USB stick and a DVD that has all the software and everything on it. And three of them for free, sent to my house. Free shipping, everything.
Neat.
I put two of them in the back room, so...
Cool.
If anybody out there or here would like to play with them, we have a whole bunch of MSP430 things in the back.
I'm interested. True. Do they cover how this project is powered? There's a couple of different ways I could think that you could either pull power out of the headphone port or you could just put your own CR2032 battery in it.
I would assume the power would come from the jack.
The system uses a 22 kilohertz audio signal, which is converted into 7.4 milliwatts of power at 47% efficiency. That
Neat.
Power is used to run the TI MSP430 microcontroller. Yeah, so...
Yeah, MSP430 is one of their big attributes is that they're a pretty low-power chip.
So are they pulling the power then from the
It sounds like they're
jack?
Pulling it right from the phone itself.
Yeah, I guess because it's got to send power out through there if you had headphones plugged in to make sound.
A small amount of power.
Right, very small amount. They're just That's cool.
Well, that's neat.
And then I guess the last link we have here...
Be confident, Nathan. Don't guess.
Okay. I know the last link we have is the largest Arduino Shield ever. Tim?
Right. folks over at 23B in Fullerton, California, they're putting together kind of some of their project for Open Access Control 2.0. They're looking to do some real-world controlling from one of their Arduinos, and they're showing that they've got this, they've built a shield that is just gigantic compared to the Arduino itself. It's at least, it's more than four Arduinos together. And the whole
That's
thing just
huge.
Has, you know, a bunch of very industrial styled input output, hard relays, you know, and
do you know if this is designed to dock with the original Decimila Nova or one of the Arduino Megas?
That's a great question, but it only docks with the Decimila Nova pins.
The original.
Yeah, the original. So it fits that format. What I know of the Mega, you could still fit a Mega on there, but it's got nothing. The shield would cover the extra pins and not use them. So,
okay.
I mean, you could use it if you wanted to, but
the Mega was a physically larger
right.
Arduino too.
Right.
So I don't know if they targeted that since it is such a large shield.
They did not.
Okay.
And from what I know, this has a bunch of input outputs for alerts and other different access control. Things
right.
Yeah, why did they originally design this then? Sounds like there was an actual intent for this shield.
Well, that's I believe it's for their own work with Open Access 2.0 that they're looking to control more of their own space in that way. Like we have here, we have our door that's like you know computer controlled. We have the alert light that's computer controlled from our IRC channel. We you know. These are things that hackerspaces will do, is they want to then control their space electronically and...
space of the future.
Yeah, it says right here that it's based on the Arduino and supports two door readers, four alarm/monitoring zones, and four output relays. So
awesome. So it looks like even it is they're not just talking about one door.
Yeah,
right.
Multi-access.
One like system. That's pretty cool. I know. Also, if you are subscribed to the Hackerspaces mailing list, there's a little thread. It just started. Like they just posted this earlier today. So.
By the time the podcast is up, it should be.
Right. By the time the podcast is open, it'll be either really large or it'll be the same size as this now. Either way, there's a slight conversation going.
Yeah.
Neat.
And I think you can subscribe to that if you go to hackerspaces.org.
I think it's list.hackerspaces.org.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, and then you can jump on the discussion or discuss list.
Yeah.
So for events, it looks like we have one event.
Yeah, so the shop some members of a shop representing the shop decided to go to Hope last year. I wanted to get more people to go to 27C3 with me, but I couldn't talk them into it. Something about $1,000 ticket to get over there.
Right.
There's only 70 euros to get in.
That's,
which is like 90,
right.
90 bucks.
Okay.
How's the euro that low now?
It's about 130% of the dollar. So we're planning to go to DEF CON this year.
And who's driving us?
I am.
Somebody got a new van. We want to break it in. But
on a half-country drive?
Going from Huntsville to Las Vegas, isn't terrible. It's only about 1,700 miles to get over there. Unless you go down to New Orleans and see Gumbo Labs, and then go across to Houston and see the space there, and then go up to Huntsville, Texas, and see the prison there. Since, it's Huntsville, Alabama, we should go see the prison.
I know.
And then we go up to Dallas, and we see the space up there. And then we go down through Dublin, Texas, and we pick up some Dr. Pepper. And we stop at Austin, Texas, and we see the space there. Then we continue around. There's 8 hackerspaces we want to stop.
Are y'all going to be gone for the year?
Yeah.
We'll see you guys back next March.
Yeah, I think this was like thrown out as an idea.
Yeah,
I don't know that
How far can we, like, since we're going out there, why don't we stop along the way and see some faces?
I don't know. We have jobs and lives and wives.
I'm not married. Anyways.
Yeah, all of us are married.
So there's a DEF CON trip on the wiki.
Yeah, we're definitely going to DEF CON.
Yeah, right. We don't have details yet.
I know.
Other than we're going
singular hotel room of epic proportions, I give you, but was thrown out for all of you.
Right.
An idea.
Right.
Yeah. DEF CON is the first weekend in August.
Yes.
In Las Vegas, America.
Yeah. Nevada.
Las Vegas, America.
America.
I just like in Las Vegas how, we're in America and in Las Vegas, so let's bring the rest of the world to us. We don't want to have to go there.
Yeah,
so there's an Eiffel Tower, there's the New York Bridge, all kinds of stuff there. Anyways. Also, I see that that Mr. World has made a maker's trip to Unclaimed Baggage on February 5th.
Some of you out there may have heard of Unclaimed Baggage. It's one of Alabama's claims to fame. Woo! It's a great hacker resource, and it's been touted that way that we can go 40 minutes away from our own space and get really cheap stuff.
What's so special about this store? What's the big gimmick?
The big gimmick is that these are all of your lost luggage from all over the U.S. and possibly the world. the things that Unclaimed Baggage will buy in lots and then turn around and sell. And it's a little Goodwill-ish, but
it's like Goodwill to the extreme,
right,
with quality products.
Exactly. Well, and lots of electronics, because people travel with their ebook readers and their iPods.
One of the really cool things is that their electronics are about half price.
You're right. Right.
Now there is like 14-day in-store return policy, and so if you buy something you don't like it, you take it back, but you only get money for store returns. But I got this ThinkPad that I use a couple of years ago.
My ThinkPad is also free.
Right. I think I paid $475 for it a couple years ago, and it was still under warranty.
You paid $300 for mine. Yeah. At the time, I
spent
a lot
on ThinkPads. Just so you know. But they have laptops, they have ebook readers, they have all kinds of stuff.
iPods, iPhones,
hunting vests.
They also have Hoggle. If anybody has seen the Jim Henson movie Labyrinth, the amazing weird things that actually seem that get touted as lost through travel. I mean, there are things like the soundboard might be from there. This one isn't, but things like you could find things like that there.
They also have a crap load of micro SD cards.
Oh yeah, we love those.
Well, because they recover a lot of phones as well, and they wipe the phones ish.
So when we go, who knows what we're gonna get? We might come back with 400 micro SD cards or nothing,
or a new puppy,
yarn.
Or a new Bible, or
a welder.
I mean, they have everything there.
So are we gonna take pictures when we go there, and come back with all of our stuff?
Oh, sure, we could. I might be able to dig up some of the old links that have other blogs that have mentioned our little unclaimed baggage. So if you get down to the Huntsville area, North Alabama, Scottsboro specifically, you might want to check it out, actually.
Go see Giant Rockets and go shopping for
cheap stuff.
All in the same day.
Yeah.
But of course, stop by our space.
Yeah.
All right. I guess time to wrap it up. Thank you for listening. If you know of something else for the show, please drop in an IRC. We are on Makers Local in the network Freenode, or send us an email. You can find out everything about Makers Local 256 on makerslocal.org. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.